It is my great pleasure today to introduce composer and clarinetist Luca Luciano, who hails from Naples but who makes his home now in the United Kingdom. As we will soon discover, Luca is a very accomplished clarinetist whose compositions for that instrument have done much to advance contemporary clarinet music, moving easily between jazz and classical music, if we can even distinguish or have any need to distinguish between what may have become outdated forms. Who knows? Maybe Luca will talk about that. But anyway, good afternoon, Luca Luciano.
Good afternoon to you all. Thank you for inviting me.
And welcome to Monday Afternoon Classics with Gandalf. It is indeed a pleasure and a privilege to visit with you today. And I know our listeners are anxious to hear more about you and, of course, to become acquainted with your music and your performances on the clarinet. So how about telling us something about your own background? Where did you grow up? When and how did you become involved in the clarinet and composing?
Well, actually, I was born in Naples in 1975. And I lived there for the first 26 or 27 years of my life. Just traveled a bit around, you know, Italy or a bit around Europe. But I finished my studies there in Naples or at a city called Salerno. That is a city just 20 miles from Naples, where I studied their conservatoire. And I started music fairly early, not really that. You know, that early, like some child prodigy, but more or less at the age of 11, I was introduced to music by my school teacher, like many other you know, young people. But fortunately, this music teacher was very keen on teaching music, and she spoke to my parents and tried to encourage me to study music more seriously, and that's basically how it started. I started with the flute, actually, not with the clarinet. The clarinet would be a later development. It would happen later on in you know, in my life. I started with the flute, studying at the Conservatoire of Naples. Then I got involved with jazz music because I was really passionate about improvising and about finding a way to express myself, my feelings through music, and I thought and felt that improvised music would give me this opportunity. So I took up the sax, the alto sax, and I was studying seriously jazz music, all the greatest, including Charlie Parker and all the greatest American musicians. And then at a later stage, I decided that I wanted to finish my classical studies. So I took up the clarinet, and finally, you know, graduated in clarinet at the Conservatoire of Salerno. And I managed to publish a debut album when I was still in my early 20s after the graduation. And then after a few years, I thought to start a new adventure in London, and I moved to the UK, and more or less here I am after some years of experience as a performer and also as a composer, trying to promote my own music, my own projects around. And,
well, let me just interrupt you for a minute, and then we'll get back to that. But let me ask you this question: when you mentioned before that when you started to become very interested in classical music, you started to play the clarinet, and I'm interested to know what prompted that choice, since you had already become adept and probably very good at two other instruments.
Well, actually, there's always been an interest in classical music. My very first album, the first album that my father bought me when I was young, was Vivaldi's Four Seasons. So the passion for a certain type of music has always been there. What was not clear, because I was young, I wasn't mature as a person, as a human being, let's say, and also as an artist, wasn't clear what was really what was really the thing that I was looking for. So it started with classical music, but then I got disenfranchised because I was a bit alienated by such an overwhelming tradition that then became felt like it was constraining my creativity. That's why I approached jazz music. But then I got disenfranchised with jazz music too, as things rapidly changed. It wasn't really what I was thinking it was, and it felt that also jazz music, and probably today more than when I started playing, it became more and more a type of music, a genre of music where a certain type of tradition got established, and they would expect you to play in that way. And the problem was that classical saxophone wasn't really something that I was very keen on. With all due respect, you know, to the sax, that is an instrument that I love, but probably the saxophone need a few more decades to develop, like other instruments when they were young, the clarinet and others, to develop that repertoire and that that kind of style that is distinctive for you know that kind of instrument. So I prefer to play classical clarinet, study an instrument with a strong classical tradition and a clear where there was a clear direction and was clear what you were going to do, rather than doing it on the sax. And then what happened was that I realized that the clarinet would fit basically my style and give me the chance to really express myself in full, because a brass instrument like the sax would have given me the opportunity to play certain type of music like jazz or funk, certain type of contemporary music, but not the whole thing that I can do, for example, with the clarinet, if in case I want to do something that is a bit more, let's say, contemporary classical or 20th century music, or with that kind of late romantic kind of feel. So it feels like the clarinet gives me a wider spectrum, a wider range of opportunities that really fit my my aesthetic and also my persona. So it gives me the opportunity to be myself, in other words.
What about the flute? You mentioned the flute. Have you given up that entirely?
Yes, actually, I still have my flute here, even if I don't have the chance to play it that much. In the end, what happened was this, that I decided to specialize only in clarinet, because I already have lots on my plate between the so-called classical or the so-called jazz music and my own research of the contemporary music and other things. So I decided to specialize only in clarinet, mainly soprano clarinet, because the market is already full of musicians, multi-instrumentalists, people who can play. You can play maybe two, three sax and a couple of clarinets and the flute. Excellent session players. For example, you find many of these musicians in the Broadway scene, for example, people who can easily play three, four, five instruments and get lots of gigs because of their versatility. So I decided to become more a specialist rather than maybe play an instrument like, for example, the flute, not at the same standard or with the same, mastering that I could have on the clarinet. The music scene is very competitive. There are flutists who can really play the instrument at the highest level. So it's I thought it was better to specialize only in clarinet and hold my own with one instrument rather than playing other instruments, not to the standard that I would like to have.
Well, pretty soon our listeners are going to hear just how well you play the clarinet, and I have several questions that during the course of our visit I will ask you about the clarinet and your composing for it. But I've read that you spend considerable time researching, and I'm quoting now, extended techniques for the contemporary repertoire and new compositions for solo clarinet. And I must say, I love listening to you play the clarinet. What does that mean, though, that you have spent a lot of time researching extended techniques? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. And actually, you will listen some of these techniques in the clarinet solo music will play today. As an academic, as it often happens, you're encouraged to undertake a research or a specific field of interest. So when I started working and lecturing at the University College where I was teaching, I got interested in these extended techniques and consequently on repertoire where these extended techniques can be applied, because one of the difficulties is exactly this. It is also, you know, some of the feedback that I get from other clarinetists is that beyond you know, the difficulty of learning new techniques that at some stages can be completely different or can be techniques that completely disregard some of the stuff that you've been taught when you were a young musician. On the top of it, there is a really pragmatic question, like where do you actually use these techniques? So you have learned it, but there isn't, or the feeling is that there isn't that much music out there where you can actually use the stuff that you have learned. So in part, he encouraged me to write some stuff for clarinet solo, not only to use it in my own music practice, you know, during my performances or my compositions, but also write new things for clarinet solo and start investigating, start researching, creating a connection with leading composers and, you know, get some music from them. And I often have the opportunity to premiere some of this stuff. So in the past few years, I have premiered, I've done either a world premiere or maybe a UK or European premiere of some material that is rarely played, or even my own material exactly to show the potential of the instrument, and cast some light on rarely played pieces of music that deserve a bit more attention. So extended techniques is a term that is used in music theory that generally is associated to kind of techniques that you don't find in the standard practice. So the feeling is that kind of unorthodox or think outside the traditional or standard way to use the instrument on the standard repertoire, let's say, or the traditional repertoire. In other words, techniques that you don't use on pieces like, I don't know, Mozart concert or Debussy or Brahms music, for example. And so the two things are actually connected. So if you understand what happened first, if it was a clarinet solo project with the aim to promoting my own composition and other people's compositions for clarinet solo, or using a clarinet recital, or a research on extended techniques, that of course at one point gave me an incentive to actually see what is out there in terms of composition for clarinet solo and how they use these techniques and how it helps to convey a certain aesthetic or a certain idea by the composer on that specific composition.
Well, you have provided the perfect segue into what I think you have indicated we should do first, and that is your CD entitled, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, is it Partenope or Partenope?
It's Partenope.
Partenope. What does that mean?
Partenope is actually one of the ancient names for the city of Naples. The legend it goes that when the ancient Greeks arrived to what it is now Naples and founded the colony on the, you know, basically on the shore where there is a kind of small bay. In that part, basically, the legend was for the ancient Greeks that there was a siren who used to dwell in the sea, basically in the Gulf of Naples, and that siren had a name, and the name was Partenope. So in a way, in fact, one of the ways to call a person from Naples is also to call him not only Neapolitan, but also you can call him Partenopeo. It means somebody that is from Partenope or a son of Partenope.
Well,
so it's one of the ancient names, basically, of Naples.
And that's a wonderful explanation. And am I correct? This is what we're going to start with, right?
Yes, we're going to start, I believe, with a suite, basically, of five pieces from the album Partenope for clarinet solo.
Okay, so very briefly, do you want to say anything about this before we listen to it, or should we listen to it first and then you can talk about it?
I'll say only a few words and then we'll go into into details afterwards. It's the whole album includes music for clarinet solo. It was published last year and includes music that is part of this research. So it's music that I have composed and arranged exactly to show the potential of the instrument and some of these extended techniques that we're talking about, along with the full potential of the instrument. So there will be a variety of styles and idioms that will be used. So there is also some improvisation. There is also some hints of folkloristic music. There are a variety of techniques used also in terms of composing techniques. So there is some stuff that is completely written, like the short pieces, including the piece with a short sequence of dodecaphonic music and some other bits and pieces that will feel more jazzy. But I don't want to spoil, the surprise. We can definitely analyze things afterwards.
Okay, there are five tracks on this piece: Rondo Contemporaneo, sequenza number one, fragment number four, sequenza number two in A minor, and fragment number five. Don't hang up, whatever you do. You should be able to hear this while we're playing it, but I am going to pot you down so any noise you make will not come over the radio station. And then when this is over, I will reconnect with you, okay?
Perfect.
So don't go away. Thank you. Five movements of Partenope by our guest, Luca Luciano. Luca, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Wow. All I can say is, wow, what a beautiful sound you get out of that instrument. And it's such an interesting piece. I love the way you build on those, I'm going to say motifs. I don't know if that's the right word, but I really like what you're doing with that. There were times... particularly at the beginning of the second movement, the sequenza number one, when it appeared to me there had to be at least two clarinets playing at the same time.
Well, you mean that ostinato at the beginning?
Yes.
Yes, that's the idea. Actually, live, when I play above all in a church or cathedrals with a big reverberation or... a very long decay, I can emphasize that they're effective and more, because basically what you have is an ostinato at the bottom with a with a concert A, and then there is basically the first 2 minutes and a half of that sequenza, it's like serial music. You have basically always the same four pitches, simply used in different ways. So in that section with the ostinato, what you have is an ostinato at the bottom, and he alternates the pitches on the top. So using the right dynamics, like playing mezzo forte or forte, the pitches on the top, and quiet at the bottom, it feels like you're playing more than one pitch at the same time. If you do it quick enough, and before the decay of the pitch on the top fades out, you're already playing the pitch at the bottom. It feels like you're playing two pitches at the same time. Or imagine live, when I play, for example, here in the UK, there are lots of concert series that happen in churches and cathedrals. So the vast majority of things that I do are in churches and cathedrals. Generally, are ancient churches, so the acoustic is really awesome. So you can really play with these things. I can, there is a little bit of room for interpretation. I can stretch things even more if it feels that it's working. So, hang on to a pitch, that extra instant to emphasize the effect even further.
Still, you have to train your mouth and your tongue and your lips to really move very, very, very quickly, and it's amazing to me just how you're able to do that, but you certainly did. I noticed that that some of your other pieces also include an ostinato. That's something that that seems to be part of your composing repertoire. Am I correct on that, or am I mishearing?
No. On the clarinet solo things, you can find some section like this. The real challenge when you're clarinet solo, it's exactly the fact that you're playing a monophonic instrument. So you can generate some effects like multiphonics, where you have different partial, but still you don't have an actual control on the partials you generate. So it's not really like playing a chord. So you don't have the advantages that you have if you play piano solo or guitar solo. So you really want to try to find a different way to approach the pieces, so, different compositional techniques or different styles or idioms or techniques that you can use to make the music vary and not be predictable, or at one point the audience will lose the interest in the music because of course they already know what is happening. So it's the real challenge is there, and there is also that sense of the rhythm. For example, that ostinato in sequenza number one is loosely based or was inspired a bit by the tostinato of the bolero by Ravel, for example. So you have you have basically only one pitch that vaguely quotes that kind of ostinato that you find in the in bolero by Ravel, and alternated with the pitches of the series that have been presented at the beginning of the sequence. But it's also the intention to keep the some kind of rhythmic feel. So it's a nice rhythm that then gets more and more texture, more and more dynamics before getting to a cadence and introduce another section.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned the bolero, because that had crossed my mind, but then I don't always trust what I think about what I hear. So that I find that kind of interesting. And you know, you have kind of, again, you've moved into an area that I hope you'll talk about a little bit at least, and that is the history of the clarinet. After all, the clarinet was not always part of what we call Western music or whatever. When did it begin to become part of the orchestra, and if indeed it did, and how's that worked?
About the orchestra, with the orchestra, the famous project that was happening in Mannheim, that you will start seeing the clarinet. So it was more or less around 1778, more or less, if I recall. I'm never good at remembering dates, but it was more or less around 1770, 1780. On the history itself of the clarinet and its origin, there is a little bit of dispute among scholars. It is probably safe to say that the best theory is that he comes as a development of an older instrument that is still played today, that is called Chalumeau. So at the turn of the 18th century, more or less at the beginning of the 18th century, you will find some craftsmen in Nuremberg, also clarinetists, who were starting experimenting on Chalumeaus, particularly Christian Denner and the people in his workshop, and started applying the first two and then a third key on the Chalumeau, which are basically, one is basically the speaker key. So what he wanted to get was basically a B-flat. It became also a speaker key. And the real breakthrough, actually, that explains why the clarinet reacts the way it does acoustically, is that that speaker key didn't go up an octave the way you find it, for example, on instruments like the saxophone, for example, but it went up a 12th. So in a way, the clarinet was born in the sense that it's not a Chalumeau anymore, even if for quite a few decades the two names will be used for the same instrument. It was called either Chalumeau or a clarinet. It was the same thing. But the fact that it could go up a 12th, that it was exploiting a different series of partials compared to other woodwind instruments, and consequently it gave it two things that are really, to me, the most important feature of the instrument. One is the extension, that you have an instrument like mine that has some extra keys and goes lower, half a step lower than standard Böhm clarinets. You have more than 3.5 octaves of extension on the instrument, and you have a dynamic range, an excursus of dynamics from a pianissimo that you can barely hear, like almost like whispering, to a fortissimo that can fill any concert hall. So in terms of orchestra, it will be more or less in the second half of the 18th century. And then, we all know the famous compositions for clarinet from the classic and then romantic period. Actually, probably this is one of the beautiful things of the clarinet, that he may not have a repertoire that is as huge as the pianoforte or the violin, but fortunately you have some of the most renowned composer of any era that has written for clarinet. So you have Mozart, you have Weber, you have Brahms, Debussy, which is one of my favorite, you have Stravinsky, then you have Copland, Berio. So I think it is a testimony to the instrument. I know that it may sound biased, but I think that there is a reason why it always attracts the interest of major composers, and there is a reason why you find, for example, in 20th century music, an awful lot of music for clarinet, chamber music, concertos, including some of the things that I love most, like, I don't know, Copland Concerto, just to mention a piece. And still today, that's the thing that I found out with my research, you still find beyond, you know, the most established names, you find an awful lot of leading composers with quite a respectable profile that write things for clarinet, some of them very, 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 very interesting.
Well, you know, I'm really glad that you gave us that little lesson, because obviously my memory is really very poor, or maybe just my field of knowledge, and obviously the clarinet has a much longer period of life in Western, certainly Western classical music, than I had imagined somehow or other. So I thank you for doing that. And you reminded me of another question that I wanted to ask you, and that is, the makers of fine violins and cellos are well known, Amati and Stradivarius and so forth and so on. What about the clarinet? Who are the makers of clarinets, and are there those who are world renowned that all clarinetists want to get hold of? You know, one of their masterpieces. How does that work?
Well, for the clarinet, it's actually a question that is connected to this of the clarinet as well, because the clarinet that you see today, the French clarinet with the berm system that you see today, was basically presented by Buffet. So the Buffet, that is a brand of clarinet that is still one of the most sought after clarinet, was actually there when this instrument, this Böhm system clarinet with generally with 17 keys and 6 rings, was developed. And we are already around 1839, if memory serves me well. So Buffet is still, of course, active, and is still probably the one who has the largest share of the market, for obvious historical reasons, and also for the fact that you can find professional instrument at a very affordable price. So value for money, if you go for soprano clarinets, you can find a professional instrument at a very good price, which is one of the advantages of the clarinet, because, for example, you were mentioning a violin, but in proportion, if you'd like to get a professional violin, you'd pay like probably 50 times, if not 100 times more than you pay for a clarinet. Mm. So imagine a price for a clarinet, you would even buy a good bow on a violin. So the beauty is exactly that, music lovers, people who love the clarinet, would like to approach the instrument, can easily get hold of decent instrument or professional instrument at a price that they can afford. Then in the years, others have come to the market with quite interesting instrument. The Selmer, for of course, there is also a major player for saxophones and makes some very good clarinets. Also Yamaha in the past few decades has gone up quite a bit, because it started with mainly study instruments, but some of their professional models are very, very good. And there are also, those are really the major players, let's say, like thinking in record labels terms, it's a major label. And then there are like independent labels, smaller firms who make custom-made instruments. So maybe they manufacture only a few instruments a year, maybe for an higher price. And some of them are actually very interesting, and they're also endorsed by world-renowned clarinetists, namely the LeBlanc. It's probably one of the main, let's say, clarinet makers in terms of custom-made clarinets. But also the Patricola in Italy is going quite well, or Rossi from South America. So there are quite a few things out there. So there is quite a bit of choice for those who want to, you know, go around and try to find the instrument that suits their style.
Well, I thank you for that explanation. And, of course, you've made me think of about 100 more questions. But right now I've got to take a station break. So there's going to be a few seconds where you won't hear anything. But don't hang up. I'll be right back, and we'll continue what we're doing. Okay?
Perfect.
The time is approaching 1 o'clock. This is 90.5 FM, WJFF, Jeffersonville, New York, and 94.5 FM, W233AH, Monticello, New York, streaming online at wjffradio.org. And let's see, let me just thank the underwriter.
Support for this program comes from our listeners and from Crystal Run Village, services and advocacy for people living with intellectual disabilities and spectrum disorders, crvi.org, and from Van Gorder's Furniture, with showrooms in historic downtown Honesdale and scenic Lake Wallenpaupack, on the web at vangorders.com.
Okay, we are about to start the second hour of Monday Afternoon Classics with Gandalf. Our guest today is Luca Luciano. Am I mispronouncing your last name, Luca?
No, actually, it's correct. It's correct. You actually are one of the few who are pronouncing it, right. Generally, people don't get it right in the UK. So it's Luca Luciano.
Okay, thank you. I have to tell you that I've only been to Naples, to Napoli once, and that was, I think, two or three summers ago. I've been to Italy probably 8 or 9 times, but I'd never been as far as Naples, and I just love that city. I have to admit, I found it very, very, very interesting indeed, for a lot of different reasons. So that's where you grew up, right?
Yes, yes. Actually, generally, you'll find people who say that they're from Naples in the sense that they want to give you an idea from what part of Italy they are, but maybe they are more from, you know, smaller cities or town, and you know, they tell you a name that you would recognize. In general, actually, don't find, even in Italy, it's difficult to find the clarinetists that come from big cities, simply because there is a very strong tradition of brass band and wind bands for, you know, in villages and towns. So almost all of them, they have their you know, wind band, which is a beautiful reality. You know, you have kids growing up. It's really the grassroots for you know, these kind of things. You have kids growing up in a brass band or wind band, and maybe then afterwards they go to the conservatoire. So it's quite, among many unorthodox things that I have experienced or that I present, there is also this thing that I'm from a big city, which is generally not something that happens with clarinetists, at least in Italy.
How long have you been in the United Kingdom?
I've been here already for, it's 10 years now. I moved in early 2002, so it's exactly 10 years that I've been here in London.
And you've never been to the United States?
No, actually, as I was mentioning to you, I never had the chance. I'm trying to plan something exactly in New York, also because I have some contacts also in the jazz scene that includes some very, very talented musicians that sometimes they come to Europe to do some concerts. So I've been in touch with people. I know a few other people on the East Coast. So, I've always had an idea, so I have to put my mind on it and try to organize something, also exploiting the logistic advantage. It is very easy to get from London to New York, so it is something that can be done. So it's definitely something on my to-do list.
Well, now you know us, too.
And yes, yes.
We certainly would want to promote your visit here, and I'd love to meet you. And I hope that that will work out. We can discuss that later on. Let's I'm just thinking, what should we play next? Do you wanna do the homage to Charles Bird Parker and maybe talk a little bit about the relationship between classical music, whatever that is, and jazz, or would you prefer to do something else?
Well, let's go for the homage for Charlie Parker. So, you know, we give a complete idea of the album Partenope. And by the way, if the audience, at home is interested, they can also find full info or full details about the album on my website, including a detailed analysis and tracks and a preview and other stuff, videos. If they like what they hear, they can find it on my website. Shall I give my website?
Absolutely.
Perfect. It's very simple. It's www.lucaluciano.com, and it spells LucaLuciano. And for the friends of WJFF and for all my fans on my website, there is also a special offer on the album Partenope. So, and I'm always happy to be in touch with my fans, so they can also find me on Facebook or MySpace in case they like social networks.
Thank you. That's wonderful, Luca. And I'm sure that that you will hear from some of our listeners, because we have a very sophisticated audience here. We're a small town. We're about 90 miles west northwest of New York City, in the southern part of New York. But we have a very sophisticated audience here for classical music, and we're going to hear Homage to Charles Bird Parker. This is a short piece. You call it Jazz Impromptu. Tell us a little bit about this and how it fits in.
Yes, it is like it's a kind of an extra track on the album, in the sense that the idea on the last two, three albums has been to create a kind of a program, like a program of a recital. So it would be like the first five pieces is, let's say, the real program of the recital, and then you would have an encore. There would be this jazz impromptu. It's a bit of a word game, in the sense that impromptu means improvising anyways. So jazz implies improvisation anyway. It's a free improvised track. It's really, I was in the studio, there was some extra time, and Charlie Parker is actually one of the jazz musicians that I like most. When I used to study sax, I used to work on his solo quite a bit, and he may not appear much probably on albums like Partenope, but I like that kind of improvisation, maybe a bit on sequenza number one. That is, you can notice some kind of bebop lines. The contrary to what people would think, this is not really a bebop track. It's a free improvised jazz track using a variety of jazz techniques, including, for example, the blues scale. There are some extended techniques. And most of all, there are three short quotations from some of Charlie Parker's most famous tune, namely Now's the Time, in the middle something from Donna Lee, just the first bar, just a short quotation to basically introduce another idea. And then at the end there is Yardbird Suite before getting back to Now's the Time. But I don't want to spoil the idea.
You won't spoil it. Don't worry. I love listening to this, as I love listening to all your music. And this is a short piece. It's a little under 4 minutes, but we're going to enjoy this piece very, very much. This is our guest, Luca Luciano's Jazz Impromptu, which he actually calls Homage to Charles Bird Parker. So we'll be back to talk in just a little under 5 minutes. I love that little tease at the end, Luca. That's a lot of fun. It really is. That was our guest, Luca Luciano's jazz impromptu homage to Charles Bird Parker, and it's just fascinating to me. I love what you do with your music, and we're going to go on. You know, I was thinking maybe we could go to the other CD, the compilation that you sent me, and maybe we could do the music for clarinet and piano. I'm thinking maybe the Sonata number 3, because that leads us into a question that I wanted to ask you. So yes. Is that all right? After we do this, our station manager, our wonderful station manager, needs to come up and talk to the listeners for just a minute or two or three about an event that's coming up. So, but first we're going to do this. All right. This is music for clarinet and piano. And my question is this. The clarinet is a very distinctive instrument. It has a very distinct sound. And I'm wondering, do you have particular other instruments that you prefer to include in chamber music that you're composing with the clarinet? And if so, why? Are there instruments that you would, you know, maybe never think of using?
Well, my main project is actually clarinet and piano. So basically, there is the clarinet solo project that, if people can imagine, it's not easy, you know, to promote this kind of project. I actually consider myself lucky that I have the opportunity to play, you know, my music at recitals and concerts. So generally, the program is the core of the program is my music plus other things according, you know, to the type of series that I'm doing. But really, the main project is clarinet and piano that takes most of the most of the attention. And like others, I mean, it's always happened with the composers, there is a kind of a pragmatic approach to composing, in the sense that I like to write or arrange something that I know that will see the light in a medium short term, so whether I play it or somebody else play it. So I specialize in small ensembles, duo, trio, quartet, quintet. I don't write, you know, large scale work. And it's generally, it started for many jazz musicians. It starts with improvisation. It starts with, you know, writing a tune and putting some chords on it. And then he developed more and more. And, for example, I've written some stuff for clarinet and string and guitar quartet because I'm in touch with these very impressive guitar quartet in Brazil, in São Paulo, where I go almost every year. So, you know, I have the opportunity to play with them. We actually premiered one of the pieces, one of my divertimento that I dedicated to them last year. We played it last year in Brazil, exactly because... as you can see, I know that I can play it with them, that will actually be performed, and maybe, you know, they can play it in the future with another clarinetist with whom they, you know, they collaborate. So there is a kind of a pragmatic approach, writing things that I know that I can play, or will have the chance to play. I've written a few things, a clarinet and string quartet, and or things for flute and guitar. They're generally short pieces or pieces of medium length, and generally for a small ensemble. But yes, the clarinet tend to be featured quite a bit, simply because I like to be involved myself as a performer, or it's of course my instrument, so I know how to make things work. And it's always nice to see other clarinetists playing it and see how they, you know, how they approach the music.
Well, it's very interesting to me. That's an interesting mix, the idea of clarinet and a guitar quartet, did you say?
Yes.
because the kinds of sound that they make, what's the word that I want, are really very different, it seems to me, and it's an interesting mix. Have you recorded any of this?
We're planning on recording some stuff. I'll send you later on at least a video or two of you know, these performances and premiere we did last year with you know, with them. I'm sure you'll love it. It's it's difficult to organize things also in logistic terms because we live so far away. And sometimes when I'm there in São Paulo, it gets so busy because, of course, I'm there only for a few weeks, and in those few weeks I have to really squeeze in all the things that I can do it, you know, to make it worthwhile, of course, because it's about going to the other side of the Atlantic, so you really want to, you know, squeeze in all the things you can do, the concerts, the educational events. So we never had the chance, but we are planning on... recording some stuff, and of course it will be my pleasure to send you some stuff when you will be ready.
I would love it.
Yes. And in the meantime, I'll send you some video so you can even see, you know, live sometimes the feeling of the live performance. Above all, for somebody like me, I like to let the music get through the through the body, through the soul, and let the music lead me. So it can be probably a different experience if you actually see the video of a live performance and see, you know, the things how they happen. Actually, there are also some nice videos for people, maybe people at home, if they're interested, on my website of other clarinet solo music, like a video on Luciano Berio's lead for clarinet solo. It is one of my favorite pieces. Mm. For other bits and pieces that I've written that I'm hoping that I can, you know, record soon. There are so many ideas, you know, and Potentially, I have material for another 2-3 CDs. I just have to find people that is crazy enough to produce this kind of stuff.
Well, when you come to New York, we're going to have you come up here, that's for sure. And I look forward to anything that you can, send my way, and we certainly will play it. What about this piece, Music for Clarinet and Piano? One of the things I haven't asked you, and I keep forgetting, is when did you write these pieces? When did you write this piece?
The sonata were written shortly before the record session of the album Neapolis that includes this material. So they were written more or less around 2003, 2004, because we recorded this stuff in the summer of 2004. Probably something that would be interested for our friends at home, it's probably to know the structure of these pieces. Both the sonata and the sequenza, they have a similar idea, which is basically composition that includes a section of notated music or written music and section of improvised music, where basically in the case of the sonata, the improvisation is used like in sense of real-time composing. So it's a kind of monothematic sonata, more inspired by the form of the sonata, of the pre-classic sonata. So it's not really in the structure of the sonata, for example, you find by Beethoven, for example, but of the sonata the way it was prior to those composers like Mozart or Beethoven. Uh-huh. So it was opposite to the cantata that was meant to be sung, hence cantata. Mm-hmm. This one was meant to be played, hence sonata, or also canzone da sonare, song to be played by an instrument, basically. So it's generally monothematic. There is a theme or a main idea that is presented at the beginning. In the case of sonata number 3, with a rubato feel, then there is a middle section, there is a section where the ideas are developed using real-time composing and techniques that are basically the basso, the basso cifrato, the basso, the figure bass that you find in ancient music, as it was played by the lute or the harpsichord. So the technique similar to what jazz players use, like they have chord symbols and they negotiate how to put the different voicing in different chords. It was basically the same thing that musicians of the past used to do. So it's a bit of recycling techniques that have been there for hundreds of years. It gives us the opportunity to engage with the audience and make the composition unique every time that is played, before getting to the final section where the main idea or the main theme will get back, either varied or more or less the way it was presented at the beginning. And maybe there is a coda in the end just to wrap things up.
Who's playing the piano?
The piano is Franco Piccino. It's a very, very interesting talent. The piano, Franco is more or less my age. And we met briefly in Naples, and then we moved to the UK together, actually. So the project of London was a project we did together at the beginning. Then some years ago, Franco moved to Paris. So he lives between Paris, Barcelona, and Naples now, doing his own things. But he lived here in London for a while. We work on this material together. I wrote most of the stuff, thinking, of course, of Franco to play together. We recorded together, and then we went separate ways. Of course, Franco is he's an astonishing talent, so it's fair enough that he wants to, of course, pursue his own path. He's also an excellent composer himself, both as a jazz player and as a classical composer. So I'm sure you will come across his name a few times more in the future.
Okay, we're going to hear this piece, Music for Clarinet and Piano, right now, and following that, our station manager will be up here, and he'll be talking to us for a couple of minutes. So here we go. This is Music for Clarinet and Piano, and it is Sonata number 3 in one movement only by our guest Luca Luciano.
Thank you.
What a lovely piece, Luca. Sonata number three. That really combines quite a few different. I don't know. Genre is the right word, but there's even an element that seems to me of popular music that you've infused into that. I don't know whether you hear that or not, but.
Well, you can hear quite a few influences, and there is definitely a an attitude towards lyrical, singable, you know, line, which is typical. It's like the Italian bel canto, you know. So there are indeed lines that can be, you know, that can be sung, and there is also a kind of postmodernist approach in the sense of re-elaboration of the styles of the past. So there are a variety of influences. At that time, when we were when I was writing this stuff and working with Franco too, there was we both musician who loved the late romantic repertoire. So you can probably hear that kind of atmosphere typical of Debussy or Ravel in our playing as well. So in the end, again, being a sonata and being a canzone da suonare, it feels like a song. It kind of gets back to the idea of jazz players who were improvising on songs, maybe show tunes, and made them become like pieces of chamber music for jazz quartet with the rhythm section. You know, in the same way Mozart or Domenico Scarlatti used to improvise during their improvisational competitions on famous tunes from the opera repertoire back in the day.
Thanks, Gandalf.
You're very welcome, and thank you very, very much. And Luca, if you can get here by May 4th, you could be our guest.
Thank you very much. I heard lots of nice things. I was very intrigued. You know, wine, beer, you know, local product. It sounded delicious. I'm even getting hungry. Here it's approaching dinner time. You know,
this is one of the great affairs that WJFF has put on, and this was thanks to the gentleman that you just heard. It was his idea. And I think this is our third annual, and it's just going to be wonderful. It's just going to be wonderful. Anyway, to get back to you, I want to remind our listeners that our guest today is Luca Luciano, who is a superb clarinetist and a superb composer for the clarinet and, as he points out, the piano. And I think we should go on. I have to get this out of my mind. In the last piece that we broadcast, I think I've got the words right. I should remember. You go to my head. La 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 la. Or did I just make that up?
It could be. It's a song I've heard a few times. The beauty of using real time composing or improvisation is that. Ideas come like this; they can, come up.
And, right.
In that specific case of these sonatas, I always try to go for a melodic, singable line rather than, melodic lines with lots of pitches. You know, so always something that has a strong lyrical content. And the beauty of instrumental music is probably one of the reasons why I like to play and compose for instrumental music. I've probably written one piece only that includes a voice and some lyrics. It's because I strongly believe in the potential of instrumental music. So as it has happened to you now, you listen to a piece and. Because it's an instrumental piece, it really gives you the chance to imagine basically whatever you want. So, which explains the titles too. For example, the classical titles like sonata, sequenza, divertimento. At the beginning, it started with basically was due to the fact that I couldn't really find a title for a piece, or a title that would explain what the piece was about. So I can, in instrumental piece, maybe I can write, the sky, and maybe when you listen to the piece, you're thinking of hell. You know, that's the beauty of instrumental music. So probably the classical title, sonata, and then pure number, 1, 2, 3, maybe with a subtitle or sequenza, would give basically the listener to the possibility to listen to the music and make of it whatever they want. Imagine whatever they want. There is no lyrics. There is basically not even really a title. They can listen to the music and imagine what really is catching their imagination at the moment.
Well, that was a very nice answer to my question, which probably was, I don't know. Anyway, what I loved about that piece also was that you really get a very mellow sound out of the clarinet, and it works so nicely with the piano. I really enjoyed that. I was thinking, we only have about 20 minutes left, but I'm thinking, what about doing the Divertimento number 3, the Londrina, for a clarinet trio?
Yes.
Would that be okay? Would you tell us about that now, because this is going to give us an opportunity to hear three clarinets playing.
Yes, this one in particular case is multi-tracking, so it's always me playing.
Okay.
Basically, the second and the third score, the part of the second and the third clarinet, it's all written, and the part of the first clarinet again includes a section of written and section of improvised music. So he starts with a short intro, a cadenza, with a quotation from Stravinsky's Three Pieces, and he goes straight to a nice sunny, bright tune, and again, like the sonata, you have a main theme, and you will go into a middle section where there is the first clarinet that is varying basically the ideas, basically improvising, if we want to say it in jazz terms. Then the original tune gets back, and he ends with a slow movement, a slow section. This is actually one of my favorite compositions. It's one of the composition I'm most proud of, because this is actually the last track of the album Neapolis that I was mentioning before. So the album Neapolis includes two suites, one for clarinet and piano, and one for clarinet ensemble, for a total of 16 tracks.
Oh.
So this slow section at the end of this divertimento includes some of the main themes that you have heard during the whole album, including from Sonata Number 3 or from Sonata Number 2, and other bits and pieces. So you have like a recap of the main tunes of the album written for a clarinet trio and using some polyphonic techniques like a kind of fugato and a cadenza in the end, just to finish the piece. So it was one of the most inspired sections of improvisation that I had. It was the best thing to finish the album, Neapolis. And for people at home wonder what divertimento and what Londrina means. Divertimento basically, divertirsi in Italian means to have fun, to enjoy oneself. So it's generally a free form, like the fantasy. There is mainly a monothematic form. A free form that is that then generally develops one tune only, and Londrina means a little London. It's a town. It's a city in the state of Paraná in Brazil. So instead of doing something lame and dedicated to my wife, I dedicated to the city where she used to live, that I visited some years ago. Hence then the title, Divertimento number 3.
Now is
subtitle, Londrina.
Is your wife from Brazil?
She's from Brazil. We met here in the UK, and we've been living here in the UK for 10 years.
Well, I hope we'll have the pleasure of meeting her also when you come here. But right now we're going to hear our guest, Luca Luciano's Divertimento number 3, Londrina, for clarinet trio from the album Neapolis.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Wow, what a lovely piece that is. Our guest, Luca Luciano's Divertimento No. 3, Londrina, for clarinet trio from the album Neapolis. Are you there, Luca?
Yes.
I love that piece. I love it. Well, I've liked everything that we've been playing today, that's for sure. I just found that particularly enchanting. Now, we only have a few minutes left, but I wanted to ask you about composers whom you are particularly, who have a special interest for you. I noticed that in one of the bios that I read, Weber, Brahms, Stravinsky, Poulenc, however, and Berio appear. And you mentioned Berio before, and I was glad to hear that because I also am a fan of Berio. Can you talk about them at all in terms of how they, what their that interest entails?
Yes. Well, actually, the promotional material like biography and things mention more, some names in terms of repertoire, just to give an idea to people who wants to find out about me and what I do. The idea of the repertoire that I play and how much he tries to embrace basically more than two centuries of Western music. And in a specific case of the composers that I actually really love or that have been, let's say, influential to my music upbringing, I think I definitely have to mention Stravinsky and Gustav Mahler. Really, I've worked a lot on some of Stravinsky orchestration, namely the Rite of Spring, for example. It's one of my favorite compositions ever. So I've listened to it a lot. I've worked on the orchestration, try to steal some secrets, understand some of the stuff that was going on, and try to see, how can I apply it in my own music. And I'm actually, when I listen to classical music, yes, I love chamber music, but I'm a great fan of orchestral music. So I love orchestration symphonies by Gustav Mahler, for example, the Titanic, just to mention one, or even the Resurrection, the second, or even those pieces that were included in a symphony, like the second symphony by Mahler, but are actually pieces also stand on their own, like the fourth movement of Mahler's second symphony, Ulrich, that is one of my most favorite pieces. So it's in a sense the clarinet and piano music. It's like trying to embrace, embrace all these influences. Try to do like a small symphony for a chamber music. It's the idea of the sequence as well. That's why they're called a sequence. Basically, mm-hmm. That's what sequenza means. So it's a sequence of ideas, again of a section of notated and section of improvised music, and this time you have a sequence of propositions that are there for the performer to develop following some guidelines. And the idea it's of the sequence that we listened to before was actually inspired not only by Luciano Berio sequence, but most of all by that famous line that Gustav Mahler said once, that a symphony must be like the world. He should embrace everything. So it's a kind of imaginary trip around the world, trying to embrace all the styles of music that I love, all the experience that I've made over the years in my trips as a musician, as an artist, as a human being. So I'm not myself somebody who has idols and people who puts there on the altar and worship, but I can say that Stravinsky or Mahler, to stay among classical composers, are really the one who have inspired me most among many others.
Well, you certainly picked some wonderful composers, and Wow. Well, now let me ask you a question, because you said, you know, you love to think of yourself as traveling. What are you up to now? Are you in the middle of composing something right now, or?
Well, there are different things on the table at the moment. I've been working with some other composers on new music for solo clarinet, again, part of the research that I'm hoping to premiere soon. I'm premiering some new material here in London in September at St. Martin in the Fields. There is a beautiful church in Trafalgar Square in the heart of the city. They have a very nice new music series. So I've been premiering some stuff in the past few years regularly, you know, there, and I'm premiering some stuff for clarinet solo by a living French composer called Marc Kowalczyk. I'm working with other composers, specifically some British composers have kindly written some stuff and dedicated to me, and collaborating with them and trying to get this music premiere the next year. I've written a few more things for clarinet and piano, some other sonatas that I've been playing recently, and there are also some nice things coming up for the summer. So from May I will get back on the performing scene. I have a series of nice concerts, recitals, some festival over the summer. So I'm really looking forward to playing my music and being around the country doing things.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing what you are composing, and I certainly hope that before long you will be able to get to the United States. And I thought maybe we would go out with a short piece that is on the compilation, She Likes Vivaldi. Is that all right if we go out with that? A tune from Vivaldi's Four Seasons, so from the album Neapolis. We only have about a few minutes left, but I'm going to put that right on now, okay?
Perfect.
I hate to end this visit, because I've really enjoyed it very, very much, Luca. But I have to. We have no choice, because we have another program coming up. Don't hang up yet. I'm going to try to reconnect with you after I go over to the next program. But if you do get disconnected, then I'll call you right back. Okay?
Perfect.
And I want to thank you again for making the time to be with us today. I hope you enjoyed this in spite of all my errors.
I definitely have, and I'd like to thank you and the people at WJFF for inviting me today. It was a nice experience.
Well, thank you very much. The pleasure, I assure you, was ours, and I'll speak to you again in a few minutes, okay?